This is the Podcasterbia Pop Culture Effect, Episode 4. And welcome to another fine show. This week, I'm joined by Sam, and we will be talking about the Star Wars trailer for the new film coming out, Episode 7, Star Wars The Force Awakens. Hello, Sam.
Hi.
We were talking about with this show and having to talk about Star Wars. I mean, we talk about lots of fantasy and sci-fi on this show, and with Star Wars is just, you know, epitomizes sci-fi. It's, you know, it is it. So we figure we got to talk about this new trailer. Have you seen it?
I have seen it a few times. Like many movie trailers, I try to avoid watching the really big ones until I see them in theaters, because I like the tingly feeling you get when you see it for the first time on a really big screen with like the booming sound. So I kept going to movies and not seeing the trailer, and I had to break down and actually watch it on the tubes.
And it was one of those trailers that it was announced that it was coming out, but they didn't quite tell you where it was going to be released in front of. Not like when they did Phantom Menace back in the day, and it was going to be released in front of Wing Commander. So like everybody went to see Wing Commander.
Everybody went to see it, right.
But they really only saw the trailer and then they left. I actually stayed and watched Wing Commander, and it was like watching Scooby-Doo in space.
We're still recovering from that experience.
It was terrible. I think we went together, actually. So, painful movie. I don't think I've seen that since, and it's probably good. But to tie in Wing Commander to Star Wars is Mark Hamill, and he's going to be in this new movie. You know, the thing about the trailers, as we talked a little bit before the show, gives us nothing. I really felt that trailer could have been created by me in my backyard in side desert, and I could have just put that together, because it really didn't do anything, and it almost felt kind of cheap. Like that it starts off in the beginning there with the desert stormtrooper,
right? And you're like, okay, we're back on Tatooine, and we've got stormtroopers in the desert, and where's the giant hairy thing?
Right,
the banthas. Stomps around. Yep. The banthas. Like, this is nothing without banthas, except we're showing racial diversity now.
Right.
Check.
Exactly. So now we got to get that out of the way. Since the Clone Wars, stormtroopers were now, you know, they would go to the academy and, you know, graduate. I mean, we saw it on Troops, the little internet video. I mean, these guys, you know, decided
that's
they
official.
Wanted. That is. That's canon.
That's canon.
It gives us a lot of back. It was deleted scenes is what that was. But, yeah, so, yeah, we have racial diversity. And, you know, he looks as lost as I do watching this trailer. And
he opens it like, are you guys ready for this? Because we have no idea what the fuck is going on. And yeah. Let's just jump into it, you know?
And it reminded me of the old, seeing that guy reminded me of the old, it wasn't really old, but the Final Fantasy Spirit Within movie trailer. Because it was the first time we saw like one of those real live action animated, it like looked.
Motion capture.
Yeah, motion capture. CG. Looked real. And that trailer kind of was just a lot of noise, just trying to impress you with the visuals. And then you had that guy take his helmet off, and he was, you know, in some sort of, you know, space armor. And he turned and kind of looked at the camera and said, you all right? Or something like that. And that's what I felt like this was. Okay, so now it's brought that back together.
Okay, this is, so overall, and I know we're gonna approach this chunk by chunk, but overall, my thought is, this is Abrams following up all the other videos he did where he's like, look, sets, look, real spaceships. And I feel like this is a, like, look, hey, practical effects.
Right, look, special effects, practical effects.
I'm the guy who's bringing it back to the source, you know, not like that Lucas jerk. So I'm doing it real, you know, and realizing, of course, that like 50% of this trailer is still CG.
Right. That's why I said I feel like we'll end up seeing this movie and none of those scenes will be in the movie. This is all the stuff that's hitting cutting room floor. It's just, I really feel like, and that's something I feel like Abrams would do too. I'm going to give you something so you can all get giddy about it for the next, you know, 7 months. But yeah, I'm not going to show you anything I'm actually going to put in the movie. And that's the feeling I got from it too, because really it's stuff that it wasn't doing anything. I mean, so we had the guy get up. We had the round robot droid.
So you think these split second scenes are essentially all throwaway? Like, you don't think there's any?
They might be, or they'll be in the movie, but they'll be throwaway in the movie too. Like, I mean, you see the sequence with the little droid rolling around, the round droid rolling. I mean, that's something that like Lucas would have put in Mos Eisley when he was doing the special editions, trying to, you know, CGI it up a bit. It was just this kind of throwaway scene. Although, for all I know, it's going to be an important droid character for the new trilogy.
Oh, I'm sure of it. I think I could have sworn I had seen something about this guy. But
yeah,
I guess what I would expect to see would be like huge set pieces, like wide shots, mm-hmm. with a lot of activity, and you've got, you know, this droid thing is just background noise, like what
right.
Lucas did when he re-edited
right.
the trilogy.
Yeah.
But this is focused on this one thing as if it's a character, it's not background. And all these are basically character shots in a way. They're introducing some of the main, like you've got the stormtrooper in the beginning. He's a main character, right?
Okay. And,
well, at least as far as, like, he's one of the cast list, right?
I'm assuming he's in the movie.
Names, so. But I feel like I should do more homework on this.
No, that's okay.
And you've got, so you've got these characters that are essentially named characters in the movie.
Yeah.
So we're giving you an intro, like, hey, you've seen these people in the cast shots,
right?
And now you're seeing them on screen in costume and practical sets and equipment and
right.
All that.
You got him. You got the woman on the speeder. So thing. I couldn't figure out who she was, but it really looked like Natalie Portman to me. And I hope we're not bringing her back from the dead for some reason. You have
sorry.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I guess the one thing that everybody hammered home watching this trailer, like the one thing that everybody focused on, was the cigarette lighter lightsaber. He's got the huge regular lightsaber going, but then the little offshoot ones, which have no purpose other than to cut his thumb off.
Okay, so I'm going to stop you right there. So I had heard the noise over this long before I saw the trailer.
Yeah.
So I was prepared for the, oh my God, this is blasphemy. How dare they fuck with my lightsabers? I'm not even that emotional about that. Like, I think you should do whatever you think makes it work, but there was enough noise about it that, you know, I was starting to feel it too. And I see it, and my initial thought was, lightsabers don't make sense without these, because unless there is some lightsaber code that says, do not slide the saber down to your opponent and slice his hand off.
Right.
How else do you sword fight without a hilt?
Yep.
I mean, there's a reason pretty much all swords have some sort of hilt or guard of some sort. So this actually kind of makes sense, except that there's like metal offshoots, and it looks like a lightsaber would just slice through that too. And I don't know what makes some metal
right.
not able to be cut versus others.
Other than it has its own little lightsaber-ish hilt.
Because if that's true,
sense.
Why don't they just make the blast doors in the giant spaceships?
Everything,
also,
everything's made of lasers.
That metal that can't be cut by.
Or so, metal, yeah.
So I saw that and I thought, okay, that kind of makes sense. And I feel like lightsabers need those.
Yeah.
And this guy is brilliant, whoever the F he is.
And let me clarify. When I first saw it, I thought it was really cool. And then I heard the outlash. And I'm just kind of quoting all that because people were really offended by this thing. Now, I do consider it to be why I call it the cigarette lighter thing, because, you know, the guy can just flick his lightsaber and, you know, he doesn't have to, you know, go too crazy.
He just
flicks the side, the little hilt side, and he can just kind of, you know, it's like a Zippo. But
so, do you know what people were upset about with regards to that?
I don't know, and I tried reading it. It's just people like saying that just looks dumb. Yeah, I think it's him trying to be cool, very much like Lucas gave, you know, Darth Maul the dual-sided one, which we'd never seen before.
Right, but you see this in a lot of the new material, especially the animated stuff, like
sure.
Clone Wars and Rebels, where the characters... I mean, the lightsabers are personalized anyway, right? I mean, you have to go out and you have to find the crystals and you have to build it yourself. Right. So it stands to reason that, you know, you're going to build it for what suits your fighting technique.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some guys have the double-bladed, some have the sort of quarter-staff style, like Darth Maul's,
yeah.
that we take apart. Some have, the Inquisitor's double-bladed spinny one. I mean,
yeah.
I am completely okay with the idea that some character is going to attach a hilt to his lightsaber. That doesn't bother me. And I'm not... Well, there was a lot of noise about it, but I never heard the argument against it.
And I think what would be more interesting is, well, one, I think it's a waste. Why'd you waste that in the trailer? Because I think that would have been so cool as a reveal in the movie. There's nothing going to be cool about it in the movie. And I think if it was a reveal in the movie and not in the trailer, I think everybody would think thought it was great.
Well, there could be other interesting reveals. I mean...
I'm sure there will be.
He's certainly blowing his load right here.
I'm
right?
sure, yeah, exactly. But you know what I'm saying. I mean, and obviously he's giving us something, and I'm not sure why he gave us that over everything else he gave us, other than that's the one thing everybody zeroes in on. So that might be that one reveal he kind of had to give up in the trailer just to get people talking, because people really aren't talking about the rest of it. I mean, the rest of it's pretty forgettable.
Lucas did the same thing in... Phantom Menace, where you see Darth Maul and he's got, like, you know, his arm out and one blade's on and then the other comes on. Yeah. I mean, that sort of reveal has been done, and I
sure.
think it is energizing when people are into it. And I don't know if people are just want to hate Abrams, or they want to find something to pick apart, because cool. this doesn't seem like it's worth the effort.
Well, what's your feeling on Abrams doing this, being the one selected to take it from here? I mean, initial reaction.
Initial reaction is I'm kind of into it. He can do – he's proven he can do spaceships. He's proven he can do action sequences.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not much else for Star Wars.
Sure.
So I feel like he can probably pull this off. As long as he doesn't try to push too much in the story, if you get my meaning there, you know.
I do, because yeah, Star Wars is about a pretty generic story. It's you know there's no real surprise reveals, and there shouldn't be, and it is just a straightforward story. It's fairy tale-ish. It's, you know, set in mythology
different
type stuff. It's
fantasy landscapes in
yeah.
a way.
You'll find it in other films, you know, similar stories. The, you know, avenging the father, redeeming the father, all that. But what I do love...
Loving your sister. Whatever.
Yeah, loving you know. Your sister. But what I think is good about Abrams is that what he's directed, I think, has been well directed. I don't hate anything he's done in the sense of how it's done. I might not be interested in the stories or anything like that, but he's been known to be a good script writer. He can write big, and he has
yes.
the history in that, so he can do that. He's brought Lawrence Kasdan in it to help him write it, who has written in the original trilogy screenplays from Lucas. So you got a guy who's familiar with writing in this universe as well, along with you, to kind of help guide him through it. I think the script is going to be good. I think the story will be good. And my hope and belief is that now that we got somebody other than Lucas directing, maybe the acting will be good. Because I don't think the actors themselves were bad. I just think it was terrible script, you know, terrible dialogue and terrible directing in the prequel trilogy that made that trilogy suffer. And I'm looking. Yeah, see, I didn't hate any of the actors. I thought a lot of them, if given better material, could have done better. If given a, you know, given something to work with, that was the problem I had. And I'm kind of excited about what Abrams is going to do with more practical stuff that he's building sets, because I remember seeing some of the behind the scenes stuff from the prequel trilogies, and it's Samuel L. Jackson in a room that's green, and right. That's the, you know, the Jedi Master, you know, council room. And there's nothing around him, and he's sitting there, and he's interacting with nothing. And I think you lose something from the actor if there's nothing for them to work with. And it almost feels green screen. I mean, especially going back and looking at it, those movies didn't age well, and they're really not that old. So having some practical effects, I think, actually helps the longevity of the movie. Plus, I think it just gives the actors something more that they can work with in the scene. Because they'll be able to kind of bring themselves into the scene because they see what they're interacting with.
I don't have a lot of problems with the idea of actors being on a green screen stage. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been done for 15 or more years now.
Several years, yeah.
I think it's a technique that actors have grown into. You hear interviews with people saying, you can look back 20 years ago and people were kind of fumbling around looking at ping pong balls on sticks. And now we kind of understand how this process works. And, you know, we're not so scared of not knowing what's going to happen, because they can't necessarily see the rendered version, even though they have animatics and stuff that they can see it sort of in process. But they've grown to, I think, trust the directors and trust the vision, and they're getting better. I mean, just actors in general are getting better at acting just to what's on stage with them and not having all the background. I mean, you've got big green screen movies like Avatar and stuff kind of pulled it off pretty well.
And I think what you said there, though, about trusting the director, I think is going to help, because you don't have Lucas. That was always the complaint of all the actors is, one, he's giving them a script that they can't work with. You know, I can't do anything with these lines. Nobody talks like this is like the most common thing heard from everybody who's worked on these movies. Yeah. You're trusting that it's going to look great, but I think there's still something to be said about having, you know, something in the room to work with. I can understand if there's going to be a green screen. I have no problem with green screens. I mean, that has been done for years. You know, the windows to almost every, you know, movie where there's a high rise, I mean, is done on a soundstage, and they, you know, put the, you know, city skyline behind that, you know, digitally after that. That's nobody films on location anymore in that aspect.
Brian's just making this declaration to everyone. Nobody.
Nobody
films on location anymore.
See, can't afford it. But well, you get what I'm saying. So, but I mean, I'm excited for that. I mean, I have like some of the things that Abrams has done and some of the other things. I mean, he's been in a interesting variety of stuff, but you know, he's mostly well known for various shows like, he did Alias, Lost. I know he wrote the screenplay for like Armageddon, which again, not a great movie. But what we can say about it is ensemble cast with a lot of going on. That's what these movies are. So he's familiar writing this type of movie before, because that's what Armageddon was. It was a big movie with a lot going on in different locations with an ensemble cast. You know, so he can do that. He can bring that together. I mean, the Star Treks. I really loved the first one. I hated the second one, and that's another episode. But we will. You know, he really worked well with that cast, and you know, made it still. It still felt like Star Trek, a different kind of Star Trek, but it felt like it. And I think that's what this Star Wars will feel like. It's gonna feel like Star Wars, but just a little different.
So do you have a concern that he's gonna turn it into like his version of Star Wars? And, you know, I understand people are not happy with Lucas, but there is also a mythical level that at least the original trilogy has achieved that I think people don't want to entirely drop and move on from.
Right. And there's also the devil you know and the other devil you know. and which one would you prefer? I'm not scared of it. I'm excited to see his take on it. And what I like about him doing this that I didn't like about the Star Trek is that at least this is continuing on with an established story. Whereas the Star Trek one, he was rebooting it and retooling it, and it kind of felt like he was cheating in a lot of ways. I think this will be more interesting because he can just take it to his next logical step. I'm less worried about this than I was with the Star Treks for him doing this. So I don't have a problem with it. And like I said, I liked him. I mean, I really liked Lost. I liked, same thing. Ensemble cast, lots going on in lots of locations. And, he pulled.
Let me see how that turned out.
Well, I mean, we don't know what happened. Well, yeah, I still don't understand the ending of Lost. But
I really appreciate someone who can pull a lot of moving parts together and keep it moving and it doesn't bog down. And I mean, that's a logistical feat to accomplish.
Sure.
And he's proven himself in a number of cases. I think a TV series is probably different than a movie, but.
We could look at it this way. Who else would we get? I would rather him than, like, say, Michael Bay. Because Michael Bay would just turn it into a visual, catastrophe and a load of nonsense and terrible acting, and Mark Wahlberg would be cast. I don't think you can have him. And I'm trying to think of directors who have done big stuff. And what's funny is, Abrams wrote Armageddon, but Michael Bay directed it. I'm trying to think of anybody else that could do it. And I'm sure there's several people that could do it. Guillermo del Toro would probably come to mind.
I'm always fascinated by the directors you haven't heard before that step up and really take off. And how much had Lucas done when he first started this? He'd done a couple movies, right? So I think saying who else could have done it is like saying we don't know.
Well, that's what I'm trying to. Yeah,
but
I guess my question was worded wrong. Right. I guess my question more was if I got somebody else, who's one of the big guys in Hollywood right now, such as like Christopher Nolan, or who's the guy that's been who did like 300 and Snyder. Those are the big guys right now that are doing those types of movies, those big, big visual movies. And they would all be different. If you got Zack Snyder, you get a lot of slow motion. If you get Christopher Nolan, you'd get a lot of people sounding different than they normally do. Changing their voices. If you got
dream sequences.
And dream sequences. Well, a flashback within a flashback.
How do we get out?
To answer the original question is, am I afraid of it? No, I'm actually excited for it. I've always been I feel like an apologist for the Star Wars universe as well. I enjoyed all six movies that are out there right now. I might have my problems with them, but I don't hate them, and I'll go watch any of them again numerous times. And it's a topic that we have in mind for a different show and it has been talked about in the past throughout the podcasts, was what's the appropriate way to watch the first six now? And because I ran into that now that my daughter's getting of a certain age, I introduced it to her and I started from 1 to 6 instead of watching 4, 5, 6, then 1, 2, 3. And it was a really neat perspective because she knew Luke and Leia were brother and sister when they kissed. And the disgust on her face when she did that, she's like, it was great. And what was even better was that she caught on. She knew what she was seeing. So she had followed through and she knew. She's like, oh, so they don't know? I'm like, no, they don't know. Oh, my God. She kissed her brother. And my daughter, who, I have a son, so who has a brother, that really became scary to her.
Yeah, I even trying to conceive of having never seen, 4 through 6 before watching the first three movies. I can't put my mind in that.
We
place.
Can't
like,
do it.
What would that experience be like?
And that's what I said to my daughter. I said, I am so jealous of you because you're going to be able to do something that I could never do. See them in what I believe proper order, intended order. And that's really cool. So she saw it all the way through, and I feel like her pull from it was different because, you know, there was no mystery to us. We knew how we were going to get there. Or we knew we were going to get there, maybe right, not the specifics along the way. But for the first three, watching the prequels, it's like, okay, well, you know, we know Jake Lloyd dreaming of angels is going to be a bad man someday. You know, there's no, like, you know, don't go down that alley. You know, it doesn't matter. You're going down the alley. So it was different for us. But, you know, my daughter didn't know that's what he was going to become. So it was interesting to watch. But that's another episode. So, but going on further from here, now it's kind of neat for us because we don't know where it's going.
Right, because we've kind of blown away all the canon that existed, right. Like the story, the greater universe, yeah. Right?
Yes, and I'm glad.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it's kind of like the Star Trek reboot. Mm-hmm. Like, we're just going to erase and start over in a way. I realize they're starting from an established starting point, but they've mm-hmm. kind of erased all of the future for the sake of getting a clean look at the universe.
I mean, we have a lot of opinions as to how, especially the hardcore people, have a lot of opinions as to how this universe moves on. And I wasn't big into the books. I read the Thrawn trilogy, and that was pretty much it. Because that was what I heard was probably the best to move on from the movies, but I never expanded outside of that. I was pleased with those, and if that's how it turned out, I was happy. But even that left it wide open to keep going for more.
I like the idea of not having all of that established canon hanging around, because it mm-hmm. I'm afraid that if I go into this and all that stuff's there, I'm going to watch the whole thing like, but this, what about that thing, and this doesn't hook up, and these characters can't be here. I like the idea of going in and just abandoning all my preconceptions and enjoying the movie without feeling like I have to pick everything apart and as far as how it fits together.
And when Lucas made the prequels, he blew up a lot of that future stuff as well, because they were making references, many of them back to prequel type things, such as how Vader betrayed everybody. You know, it was kind of spun a little differently. How all the Jedi were killed, things like that. That was mentioned in the Thrawn books, and that was kind of blown up in that part because of when Lucas made the prequels, he showed it how he intended. And that's fine. I mean, honestly, and my apologies to the hardcore Star Wars nerd, you know, canon for me is what I see on the screen. In many ways, the books really don't matter to me. I don't really care. You have all this other extra stuff out there to, you know, enhance the universe. But when it comes down to it, it's about the movies, and we can keep it within the movies moving forward.
All right. So should we get back to the trailer?
Absolutely.
Okay. So we talked about the rolling droid, which I am okay letting this ride until we see what's actually going on. I think the only thing that bothers me is physics.
Yeah.
In that, like, how does this thing function?
Why is it not falling left or right?
I mean, I realize that you could have these balancing servo motors. I'm overthinking at this point, but
right.
Okay, let's just accept that there's a droid that has a locomotion of rolling its entire body.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's so silly looking because, I'm looking at the trailer right now. The head is bouncing on top of this ball.
It looks like it would vibrate itself apart, right?
It's like an R2-D2 head on top of this soccer ball. And it's just rolling down. And if this is an important character, cool beans. But it's
pretty... We don't need our R2, right? Like, we need something... Because we can't have R2 in every effing movie.
I know, and he's going to be. I mean, him and C-3PO will never die. Those are the characters they need to kill. Then we know nobody's safe.
That is the best thing I've ever
heard. Right in the beginning. First scene.
It's like Abrams is like, okay, everybody likes Game of Thrones, right? We are totally bringing it forward.
Right. We're just going to kill everybody in the first scene. Like, have, like, you know, Luke, Leia, Han, R2-D2, C-3PO, Chewbacca on the Millennium Falcon just kind of floating along. And then, like, a TIE fighter comes down and just blows them up.
Well, not a TIE fighter. Maybe an asteroid. Like, somebody wasn't paying attention.
Something silly. That would be even better.
Asteroid out of nowhere.
I love it. Or this rolling droid.
Maybe he's really big and he just rolls. I'm getting
off. All
right. So okay, droid, and I do like the background here. I don't know if I should be going into such detail, but I love just like ships hanging out in dry dock in the background.
It's a neat little scene with the background, the details. You have these ships. I mean, this kind of gives you. We're, you know, kind of on the outskirts of Mos Eisley feel or something like that. And then we move on in the trailer and we got stormtroopers.
Strobe troopers, as I prefer to call them.
With a strobe light.
And
they're a little different looking.
It's not a really exciting shot. Well, yeah, there's the constant evolution of the Star Wars universe that I really like. I mean, I love the, I don't want to get into this too far, but I love the idea that just like, a Mustang changes from, you know, 63 to modern times. It makes you feel like time is passing. People are learning. Things are changing. There's got the new models. And I feel like these guys sit around in the cantina and they talk about, I remember when I had, a Millennium Falcon from that day. And I, you know, the container transport. I remember when. Did you remember when they made that really crappy model that exploded when you tapped it in the back quarter or something? I mean, right. I like the idea that there is a history to the vehicles and the technology that we see.
That's
from
a great explanation of it.
Hundreds of years ago to... Yeah.
That there's an evolution to the helmet.
Right, yeah.
And that's the best explanation I heard because at first it annoyed me because I'm like, oh, man, Lucas couldn't like go find the mold and make it better, make it the same. But no, it should evolve, and that's absolutely true. In describing it as the Mustang evolving through time and changing shape and contours.
Just a guy who knows nothing about cars. I apologize.
That's okay.
But I remember there's 63 is a year that people talk about, right? That's a thing?
Oh, gosh, all throughout the 60s. Then they became, you know, they look like escorts with, you know, a 5-liter.
Anyway, so I just love seeing that. That evolution of technology. I like the idea that, someone is saying, oh, there was a problem with the armor in that model year. We need to get the stormtroopers in something better because it solves some issue. And I don't need to know what that issue is. I just like the idea that it existed and they were trying to make it better.
And I like what Abrams is also saying he's going to do. And I think it's evident in the trailer, seeing the movie feels aged. Like the episodes 4 through 6 did, even though they felt aged because they were made in the '70s and early '80s,
you can tell by the film grain.
But yeah, he's trying to make it look like it's still in that lived-in universe. Because honestly, and it was one of the complaints about the prequels is that everything felt too new to be 20 years earlier. It shouldn't. But too new in a sense that like the technology was better back then than it is now type stuff. I like that Abrams has actually embraced, and I see it in the trailer, kind of continuing the feel of technology as it was towards the end of Jedi and going on from there as opposed to taking it to that next leap or just doing something crazy on its own. Like the speeder looks cool, which is the next scene.
That was always something notable about the Star Wars universe is that when Lucas filmed the 4 through 6, it was important that the ships looked distressed, that they looked like they had lived in this world. And then you go to the first 3 movies and, you know, everything is shiny and glitterific and the technology, but I can accept that the technology was almost better in that Age of the Republic, and then it declines as the empire suppresses the people, and designs become more militaristic, and they, the rebellion can't really afford to be developing their own new.
That's the explanation I've used, and like I said, please, remember Star Wars nerds. I'm focused purely on the movies here and as what I get from the movies. And yes, I can think outside the box a little bit, but, agreed. Yeah, although those things would be new back then, and I'm cool with that. I guess moreover, there's a lot of holographic technology and a lot of just technology that just seemed to be ahead of its time then. Then a few years later, here we are on the Death Star, and there's just a bunch of red lights behind a panel. I know, it was filmmaking limitations as opposed to, and we need to look past that, but really there isn't much to look past, because there's no story. So.
The only thing I wanted to comment with regards to the strobe troopers is that there's some, it's not an amazing scene or clip or anything, but there's something about the lighting and the way it's, you've got this shot as the bay doors, good landing doors going out the back, and it's a low shot, like between the legs.
Yeah.
And I feel like Lucas would never have done that. And I think it adds a level of dynamism to the shot.
And that's right, because Lucas wouldn't have done a shot either that was that shaky. That was that kind of disjointed, making you feel like you're in the ship with them. Lucas's shots were always, from the film viewer's eyes. That shot there with the shakiness of the camera gives you you're in the middle of it with them.
It puts you on the ship with them.
And that is something that's neat too. I think that's the one, the thing that you could take away from that shot for that, because it is a pretty cool shot. We're not sure what we're looking at. It's just, hey, they're stormtroopers. And then, okay, now we got the woman who is, I can't tell if it's Hillary Swank. I don't know who that is, but she's.
We could look at the cast list if we cared enough. But honestly, people.
I know. Yeah, I know. We're not going to do that. It's more fun just guessing who could this woman be and why is she important. It's not Mara Jade. All of you extra lore people, she is not in this universe. So let's move on.
There's not much to this shot either, other than to say, hey, we've got land speeders on a desert planet again.
Yep.
I'm pretty sure we've been here already. But it's fine. It's a different look to the ship. And okay.
And then we got X-Wings. And I know it was Dennis Lawson was asked if he wanted to be in this, and he turned it down to be Wedge again. But this was his chance. He could have at least been in it for the trailer.
Looks like Wedge, even though he'd be really old by now.
Yeah.
this shot of the X-Wings over the water is the one that made me tingle.
It's a cool shot.
Like, no one talks about this because the lightsaber's too important.
Right.
But this is just beautiful because you so rarely see X-Wings in atmosphere.
Right.
Nothing else.
Yep.
And then you've got them over the water, and I am going to add my imagination to this and say, they're is there radar? They're trying to get in on the radar, right? And they're going low to avoid any
detection,
ground emplacements. This is awesome. You've got the S-foils open.
Yeah.
Like, they are totally going in for the attack or something.
And I'm freeze-framing it a couple spots. They look good. This is a
good-looking
shot, and the sun is in the background coming over the mountain, and J.J. Abrams is being, he had his lens flare taken away from him, and we have a nice.
You will not use this.
You will not use lens flare in this movie, because the moment he does, we're all going to laugh at it, and he doesn't want us laughing at these movies. So I bet we don't get any lens flare other than what would naturally occur, that's a great shot. Are they a little...
Like, they're split. They're offset. The lower one is in front of the rear one, as opposed to matching up. I don't... This is another thing of...
Okay.
Like I am not so much.
Oh, you gosh! I didn't even see that.
No, I didn't notice it until I paused it there. But it's. I think what I love is just the water vapor going over the canopy.
It's neat.
It's just a sweet shot to me.
It's a neat shot, and then we move on to here's the lightsaber scene. This cool badass guy.
Just skip it. Just keep going.
And he's like, F this tree and this snow. Here we go.
This is what I feel right now in fucking winter. Like, you know, this, I am just going to cut this shit in half.
He's fighting winter. In
you
New
know,
England,
winter
this
winter is coming, all right? And you have to be prepared with your lightsaber hilt.
All right, and then that's it, and then the music. And then we have Millennium Falcon doing a, God, nauseating barrel roll. That's going to really make people puke in 3D. And
Melman, that shit. Whatever that.
And then that's it.
Well, that's not entirely it, because we have the saber sound at the end. Just to let you know, guys.
Yep, we do have
Star Wars.
There's audio and... It is cool, though. It was a cool trailer. I mean, I like trailers. I like teasers. I remember when Phantom Menace was teased, and I still go back and watch that trailer. I mean, that trailer gave me chills because it was so cool to know that we were going to get more Star Wars, because all we had for years was the originals. And now, I mean, it's been 10 years since Revenge. And that's a long time. And it's now... You know, we're getting into it again, although, you know, we were, 20 years in between, or 15, what was it, 15 years, 20 years?
Well, Jedi was 83, so.
What was it, 99?
Yeah, I think it was.
So 16 years between those, and, you know, now we're going to get some more. And I think, you know, it was all, it's all the right decision. I'm wondering if Disney's going to put their logo in front of it or if they'll leave it alone.
Oh, just think of the Disney opening logo, right?
I know Disney's big about their opening logos. They're going to do something. They're going
like
to do something
like
awesome with the castle.
X-wing,
have an X-wing fly over the
in
castle.
3D, man.
In
3D. Is this going to be in 3D, or does Abrams not do that?
I'm assuming it is, because everything, all these types of movies are. But I really haven't looked into that. I haven't. I've been really trying to separate myself from looking into this too much, because I really do want to go watch this movie without any spoils.
Yeah, and this comes to how I feel about trailers. And I love trailers, but I would be happy if we just had teasers and nothing else. Like, if I didn't see another trailer before the movie opened, I would be okay.
I think I'll actively try to avoid them, because I'm the same way. I prefer a teaser to a actual full trailer. And the teasers are always better. I mean, some of the best, most memorable trailers I have of all time are teasers, such as when the first Lord of the Rings teaser came out, or the Phantom Menace, or go back, you know, to ID4. The ID4 teaser was great, because we had no idea what the hell was happening.
White House just blew up.
Yeah, it's a bunch of people standing looking in space. You had no idea who was in this movie, because for all you knew, the people that they were showing, who ended up just being nobody extras. You know, and that's what I like about it, though. With the teaser, just it gives you enough to get excited, but at the same time, you have no idea what you saw, so that when you go into the movie, you know, nothing is spoiled. Because I hate a trailer that basically tells you the movie.
Right. Well, trailers basically cut together their own version of the movie based on the footage they have at the time, and oftentimes they are better than the movie. And I feel like that should not be possible. So. You see scenes that like get cut from the movie, but you felt really awesome, and you miss it when it comes to the movie, or you see essentially all the plot elements. I trailers really blow it for me. I mean, I get excited to see them. I'm totally down, but I feel like it ruins the movie when it comes in. So,
yeah, and
this is enough.
Yeah, and I gotta be I mean, we saw a movie recently, and I gotta be of the same opinion. I don't go to movies much anymore. But when I have gone recently, there's far too many trailers. I remember back in the day, you used to get like 3, and then let's jump into the movie. But now, gosh, I mean, you're getting like 15 trailers. And, you know, I got better things to do than for waiting 30 minutes for my movie to start when I'm there on time. So, but Excellent. So, yeah, I mean, I guess we could do a rating system, so to speak. How would you rate the trailer? I mean, is it something that gets you really excited for the movie, or, you know, the movie's going to come and it'll come when it gets here?
Well, it piques my interest. It shows me that he's, like I said before, he's trying to capture what we're familiar with. So he's putting stormtroopers, he's got X-Wings, he's got Millennium Falcon, or
lightsabers.
It's like, okay, we've got those iconic things that we recognize.
Yeah.
Check. And I feel like it's just trying to check those boxes. And while there's nothing in the trailer, it doesn't give it away. It doesn't really show you much of the Star Wars. So someone who doesn't know what Star Wars is wouldn't know anything about the universe from this.
Sure.
But you're coming in and you feel like the boxes are checked and there's some exciting shots. So I think the trailer is good. I don't know what it means for the final production, and I'm fine. I don't want to judge the movie based on the trailer.
And I wouldn't either. But I'd say it gives me, I'm kind of middle of the road with it. I really enjoyed the trailer, but it's not like some trailers I've seen where I'm like, okay, the movie needs to be here tomorrow. I'm content waiting till December. It's a ways away, but I'm okay with that. It's going to be good when it gets here, and I'll enjoy it then.
Yeah, and I think we have enough superhero movies in the meantime to fill that gap.
Yeah. Disney's Marvel is going to blind us endlessly with characters and shots for that. So good times for all this year and this summer.
Clearly, we have things to talk about in the future.
Exactly. We got plenty of material for future shows. So, but time to wrap this one up. And as always, let us know what you want to hear from us on these shows. So you can, we need an email address for us. So why don't you just email us at, let's go with sci-fi@podcasttrivia.com, because that's a great email address that we just make up on the spot. And
that's going to happen, right?
Oh, it'll work.
Do we get to have Twitter accounts and stuff? Like I could announce my own Twitter account.
We'll get it. Absolutely. I mean, you could always get us on Twitter at Podcasterbia, but Sam here has, what's your Twitter account?
Mine is Normally Who.
Ooh.
Normally Who.
I like it. Tell Sam what you think about his review of this trailer today and whatever else you'd like to see. Also, Facebook. Love us on Facebook. We love Facebook. Podcasterbia there. You can get us there. So, and iTunes reviews. We have tons of shows. You'll find us. We're out there somewhere. So that's it for this week's episode. We'll be doing something again next week. So until then, catch you all later.
Thanks. Bye.